Donald in the kitchen talks about food. Donald in the kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the station of KHOI Community Radio. In the middle of Ames, Iowa, in the middle of Iowa, in the middle of our nation, and the center of everything. So, welcome to our kitchen table. Well, since we've talked to you last, we've had a book sale here at the studio, and it was a dandy too. I'm all ready for winter. I've got my
requisite pile
of winter reading. It was very, very nice. So fall is coming because winter's coming, and it's beginning to feel a bit more fallish here. Yeah, it is. And I hear tell Donna there's going to be a supermoon with partial eclipse
tonight.
Oh, really?
Tonight. That's Tuesday the, what date are we? The 17th? Okay. In the, like 8, 9, 10. So in the, you know, it should be good visibility.
But they schedule it as a reasonable hour.
Exactly. And since it's a big full moon, it should be really pretty, even without the eclipse.
Very good. So we'll look for that. It's always nice to look up in the sky and realize how small we all are down here. It'll be a good thing. The eclipse this evening, and watch for that super moon. Well, we have a interesting and most fun guest with us today. We have a guest from Boone, Iowa. His name is John Dawkins, and I want to thank the nice person who sent us information about.
Right, this was a listener-suggested interview.
Yes, Tom Owens said, this is a good guy to interview. You should have him on the show sometime. He calls John Dawkins Boone's best-known cool thing. So, okay, well, I couldn't turn that down. John retired from a career on the railroad and started watching TV cooking shows, and it sort of took on from there. So welcome to our studio, John.
Thank you.
Well, now, John is also, the other well-known thing in Boone is the scenic, the old railroad, and sometimes John is the conductor on that.
At Scenic Valley, this is my fifth year working Thursdays and Fridays.
Okay. So, this is a prominent citizen from Boone. Thank you for coming.
Yes. Wow. So, from railroad to kitchen to cooking for a crowd. John doesn't just kind of cook for himself in his kitchen. John has cooked for many Boone County organizations and groups, feeding multiple people, big crowds, and he donates his time. And he seems to have a real good time doing it. He has a lot of fans in Boone. So how did you get started in, well, actually tell us a little bit about.
Yeah, how did you learn to cook?
Yes.
Well, the first time I cooked, my brother was hungry. I made tomato soup with rice. That was the only thing in the refrigerator. And I put a little salt on it because I watched my dad do that. And I put a little pepper and the lid fell off. So I had to scoop fast, you know, because I didn't want the pepper to, you know, but it worked out good, and we enjoyed it. My brother said that I'm the only one in the family that liked cook, and he said,
how old were you when you started?
I was seven.
Seven? That's a brave seven-year-old. Good for you. It sometimes cooking can be daunting for people. Daunting, yes. Mm. So, we said, you retired from a career on the railroad, and you work for the Scenic Valley Railroad. Now, what did you do when you were on the railroad?
Well, I was a welder and rail grinder, so when I'm working as a conductor, people ask me, and I said that it was my job to take the clickety-clack out of the railroad track. And I worked coast to coast, the Mississippi River to the Missouri River. And I had to explain that to one lady. I said, you can't get in Nebraska or Illinois without a boat or a bridge.
There you go.
Oh.
Yeah.
We do have an East and a West Coast. Good. And actually, thank you for working on those clickety-clacks.
Well, what does a rail grinder mean? What's that?
Well, switches or joints can have wear because you're moving something the size of a house on two little rails.
Yeah.
Which is called rolling contact fatigue.
That sounds familiar to me, rolling contact fatigue. I think I know what that means.
That's from moving something the size of a house. Well, the rail used to be soft, and it would overflow. It was soft. Then they increased the Brunel hardness.
They changed the metals in the rails, you mean?
Yes. Yeah, okay. They paid a metallurgist $300,000. I said I could have done it a lot cheaper.
But it was fancy.
Yeah, but they actually had the chief engineer come out, and this guy said he wants to know what you know that we need to know.
Oh.
So they wanted me to write up a book so that when I retired, the next guy could just, you know,
do
my job. I said, what if he doesn't like to read? So I put a lot of pictures in it.
Very good. Very good.
So how did you train for that? On the job?
Yeah, the welder would train the helper.
Oh. Do they still do it that way?
Yeah, and that's all we would do.
Good. So it was a true apprenticeship.
Maintenance away guys would jump around to different jobs.
And how old were you when you started that?
Well, I'd been out of the railroad 5 years, so I started in 79 and I retired 2015. I was able to retire at 60 because I had 30 years.
Right, railroad. Yeah. Good retirements, hopefully.
But everybody said, why would you quit? You got the best job in the world. And I said, there's something about getting paid not to show up.
Good. Very good. Very good.
So then when you retired, you started watching cooking shows? Is that the story?
Yeah, my wife would say, how come when I turn on the TV, it's either the Weather Channel or a cooking show? But that's where I got ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're a self-taught chef then?
Must be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because some of the recipes I tell people I had to fix to make it either easier or taste better or easier.
Or possible even,
easier to find the stuff for. I had a meal that I had to make and it said use 4 cups of water. I used chicken stock instead and that said 2 pounds. So I had to find out how many cups are in a pound.
How many cups of like liquid are in a pound?
Well, it was 4 cups in 2 pounds, but, you know, it makes people think.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's fluid weight and dry weight. Okay, in the back of the Joy of Cooking, I think there's a table for all of that.
A lady who was almost laughing gave me a magnet to put on the refrigerator that tells all the...
It is a useful...
how many tablespoons are in a gallon.
Yep.
That's an important thing. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes,
well, that's why it's in the Joy of Cooking.
Mm.
Because it's kind of foundational. And I never remember either. I mean, some of them you get down like 3 teaspoons to a tablespoon because you use it a lot. But if you don't use it a lot, like especially converting wet... volumes to dry volumes. I don't do that very often. So you look it up, right?
Right.
Yep. And then somebody tries to get fancy and uses the metric scale and the Kelvin weights. And that's why I refer to my little list on the refrigerator too. I mean, but I kind of get by with much of that because, as my husband says, I cook from the hip. I sort of just kind of, you know, I can't, you have to look at a recipe for baking, of course, but you have to kind of trust yourself when it comes to the kitchen and trust your taste. And it sounds like you got a good start. So you ended up cooking for your family when you were pretty young.
Well, I cooked a lot for my dad when I was a teenager. And some of the recipes are real easy. I don't know.
Where were you getting recipes when you were that age? That was before food television.
Sometimes you just try something and, oh, that's good.
Yeah, really?
So I'm going to make it again.
Very good.
I don't know. I still do this. I have so much fun experimenting. I used to have a client that would say to me after dinner, Donna, oh, this was Norman Lear, right? Write that one down. I'd like to have it again.
Yeah.
But then they would ask you, and then they would forget. I made a salad for a funeral, and everybody's like, oh, man, how do you make that? And I told them, and then the next time I saw them, they go, we couldn't remember how to do it.
Well, did you remember how to do it? Sometimes I would forget what I've done.
Right. Yeah, or you miss, you know, I made zucchini bread one time and forgot to put the zucchini in it.
A culinary...
Well, as long as you put the leavening in, you were probably all right.
A culinary pioneer there was one. Very good. Very good.
That's so great. What did you learn from cooking shows?
Oh, I'd get ideas. Mm-hmm. I made some sweet potato cake one day, and I handed out samples. And the people that don't like sweet potatoes made sure that you knew that. But I gave one to the bus driver that went by, and the next day she said, tell your wife that was so good.
And you said, you will. And
yeah, my wife enjoyed it too,
well,
right?
She ended up buying one of my cookbooks.
Oh, okay. Did you use like a pumpkin pie spicing with it?
Kind of.
So you were kind of substituting the sweet potato for the pumpkin. That works.
One person said no, and then she looked at me. Because she's tried my stuff before, and she said, okay.
And, there's a trust factor there.
But she still liked it.
Yeah.
Because you do put some flavor in it. Cinnamon, nutmeg.
Yeah. One can substitute sweet potato for pumpkin.
I got it from a lady. The heading was a woman with many hats, because people say that about me. How do you get in your car with all those hats in there?
There you go. Well, you do. And
you got a convertible, right?
And also, you cook for a lot of different organizations. You're the kind of person that likes to bring a little joy in life. Talk about the people that you cook for in Boone.
Well, in 6 years, my wife and I have made 169 gallons of soup for the Humane Society. I cook.
What do they do with it? They're not feeding it to the animals.
No. I tell people I cook for cats because dogs don't care. It's a fundraiser for them.
Oh, uh-huh.
I cooked at a city rummage sale the first year just for the people working.
Mm-hmm.
And then they liked it so well. The second year they asked me to cook for everybody, which I did. And they enjoyed that. That was before COVID, so they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's a... drive through. I think you got to contact somebody, have to have a computer.
So do you have a kitchen, a larger kitchen you can work out of, or are you doing...
No, I have a one-person kitchen.
Yep, me too. Yep.
And I got a 20-inch stove, and I had to go to Lowe's and order a new one because I wore it out.
20 inches?
Yeah.
Well, oh, goodness.
It's a small kitchen.
Yeah, that's really small.
Yeah.
Well, I had a smaller kitchen than I have now, and what I found is it just kind of overflowed into the dining room. You just need, if you need more space, there's always the dining room table.
Well, I've cooked in 10 kitchens that were not in the house.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's easier when you actually have bigger refrigeration.
Places are easier to work with than others.
You know, I do remind people that in a town like, I'm sure it's as true in Boone, it's true in Ames, we have a lot of kitchen space that's underutilized. Almost every church has a kitchen that's not used that often. A lot of civic spaces have kitchens. There are no shortage of commercial kitchens if you want to do some larger cooking for an organization. Lots of churches will either charge you a minimal amount to use it, or, you know, depending on what you're doing. I mean, I know here in Ames we have Food at First, which is in a church kitchen. There are lots of good things you can do for your community with these assets that we already have existing. And you know, when an organization wants to do some kind of either a fundraiser or a public, you know, let everybody know what's going on, these community gatherings are really an important part of, at least in our small town culture. And having food at the event is, I mean, of course, we're famous in Iowa for potlucks, but, you know, if you're getting to the, you know, 30, 40, 100 person range, having a prepared meal is an important part of it. And it is not a skill set everybody has, because you have to be, there's safety considerations. You don't want everybody to get poisoned when they eat your chili supper or something.
Thank you, Donna. That's a good thought.
Yeah, yeah. So no, you have to know, you have to know what you're doing.
I took two tests off the internet. I can't remember, you know, it's been a while back.
Food safe, serve, whatever those,
One was safe serve, but I can't remember the other one. That's been a while.
Well, the main thing is you have to know how to watch your temperature ranges so that the food doesn't start to... Food degrades, you know, has biological activities, and some of those are good and some of them are not, you know, so you have to know when you have to refrigerate and how high to cook it. And the thing that happens that's different when you're cooking for dinner for four, the density of the volume is completely different than when you're cooking for, you know, 300. Like I remember one year I was cooking at the Land Institute in Kansas, and that meal is about, I think it was 300 people. So we're using these giant pots. But that year we didn't have commercial refrigeration, and all we had were these big pots. So I had cooked this beautiful squash soup that was to be served the next day. We stick it in the refrigerator, a normal refrigerator. We've taken the shelves out. The stock pot is probably, 15 gallons. It's really big. So we open it up the next day, and of course the center had not cooled. And it's, you know, fermented and all over the place. And, you know, obviously we can't use that. But, you know, you forget that to cool off something, a volume that is that big is, you know, it should have been put in smaller containers in an adequate refrigerator. But, you know, I learned.
Jen, how did you learn how to scale up your recipes for, I mean, it's one thing to make a family-sized thing, but you serve a lot of people, even with soup. How do you...
Well, I learned that two pots will fill a crock pot. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a lot of them you got to do to fill a roaster.
The roasters are good. They usually have about 4.5 gallons.
Well, a year ago I made twice baked potatoes, and it took forever. It took so long that the motion light shut off on me in the kitchen. So with twice as many people, I changed the recipe and used two roasters and to make a cheesy potato. Mm-hmm. And you can go online and you can compare different recipes and take some from one and take some from another, whatever you enjoy doing or is easier. And you can change
especially
stuff up.
If you're all the labor in the kitchen, you want to pick easier.
Yeah.
Because handwork.
And I had a lady tell me that was the best thing I ever made.
Ah, there you go.
Well, what was the recipe? Describe it.
Okay, I used the powdered potatoes.
Oh.
And then I put hash browns.
Like frozen hash browns?
Right. Uh-huh. And then I took cans of sliced potatoes that were peeled. And for texture. That's for your texture.
Okay, three kinds of potatoes.
Right. And then I put sour cream, butter, milk.
There you go. Sour cream and butter and bacon. That'll fix
anything,
right?
And a big block of Velveeta. So I had a Velveeta in each roaster. You know, because I didn't know what to expect. So then I had so much that the next time I had to make something, I already had stuff to make it with.
Well, it sounds like you start out with crowd pleasers to start with anyway. I mean, that sounds good. Anything potato-ish sounds good. You
potatoes and cheese, you can't go wrong, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You use texture so that it doesn't look too plain.
You know? Right. If you had just used the instant mashed potatoes, it would not have had the same appeal. Yeah.
But that's where you learn, like you're a chemist, because you don't know how much milk to put in it. You have to put it in, stir. That's why it takes a couple hours. And then you let it sit, and it seems to help improve the flavor.
Good. What are some of the favorite soup flavors you like to make? You say you make soup for fundraisers. What are the big sellers?
Well, I like the chili. I've done regular and which I call conductor chili, and white chili, where you use use chicken, you know. But I like pinto beans because they have the more flavor.
Mm-hmm.
White beans, I tell people, are just like chewing on ice cubes. You know you're eating something, but you can't really taste
it. Oh, see, I love white beans.
Yeah, well, pinto is white. It has more flavor.
It's true. It's whiter than a black bean.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So what's in your conductor's chili? I mean, there's chili and there's chili, so.
Well, I use a hamburger and tomatoes, chili beans, and salsa.
Salsa.
See.
Yeah.
But see, that way, if you like it mild, you can have it mild.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like it a little bit hot, you can have medium. And if you like it really hot, I mean, I served some stuff to a guy with hot, and he's like, there's no hot. So,
well, you keep the chili sauce on the side, because in Iowa,
yeah,
you can overshoot it pretty fast for the average audience. So we're not big on hot around.
The last 2 years, I made a taco soup, and everybody loved it.
Did you put tortillas in the soup?
No.
Then what made it, what did you do?
It was a recipe I found. It's like my walking tacos, you know. You let them try it, and they're like, where did you get this recipe? And I said, that recipe, I made it up on my own.
That's the most fun kind. Also, you get people to try different foods. I think, like Dinah says, people tend to be a bit too cautious. I mean, I'm all for trying new things, but some people are really set in their ways about trying new things.
Oh, people are funny about food.
Well, that's where you give them one spoon instead of one bowl.
That's
because
true.
They can say, no, you're wrong, or they can say, whoa.
Right. And then you didn't waste it if they don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's no pressure. That's
very good. Good.
That's very good.
Good. We're going to take a little station break here. Come back and talk about your cookbooks. And you brought muffins. We're going to have to talk about muffins. So, I want to remind folks, this is KHOI Community Radio. You're listening to the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We are talking to John Dawkins today, a cooking railroad person. He went from railroad to kitchen to cooking for a crowd, and he is quite a fixture in Boone, Iowa, and he gets people to try new food. I like that. Here, taste this. That's probably the most exciting words in the human
yes. Yes,
taste this. True. Here,
that's
try
a great
this. That's
invitation.
A good thing. Well, speaking of tasting this, you, John, you brought in something for us today. Describe what we have here.
Well, these are muffins. I found this recipe so long ago, I can't remember. But you're supposed to use a couple bananas, a cup of your favorite fruit, and I've tried different kinds. And it seems like everybody likes the banana and mandarin orange the best. Some
delicious
recipes will be drier, mm-hmm. So you have to use a little more applesauce. But this, you can use it with...
So applesauce is your secret to the moisture.
Yeah. Well, the mandarin orange has a little
right,
bit, too.
Right, Okay, not a lot of butter then.
Butter?
No butter.
I can't eat butter, so I try not to use it.
Oh, so it's just the applesauce that's keeping it moist like this.
Right.
Very nice.
And it has, you know, some oatmeal and whole wheat flour. And...
Good fall
everybody,
cinnamon
everybody
seasoning.
Likes it. You know, hardly ever do you hear somebody say, is it supposed to look like that? My son used to say that all the time. I was I tell people a single mother, but I was a single parent for 12 years. So I had to know how to cook. But he didn't like some of the things I made.
Yeah, you can count on your children to criticize your cooking.
Did they learn to cook too?
Not that I know of, but they, my daughter
they
loves
didn't have to.
My daughter loves it when I, can you make this? Or,
no.
Can you make this once in a while?
Oh, good. But this is delicious. And it works as a muffin and it works as a sweet bread too. And
so is there oil in it? Or it's just from the applesauce that you get this texture?
Yes.
Yeah. There is oil.
Depending on how dry it is, you might have to put more applesauce.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell people if you don't measure it, you don't have to wash the measuring cup. You just got to learn how to stir.
Okay, baking without measuring, that's pretty risky.
I don't know. People take on dangerous sports all the time, and I think it's like skydiving.
Well, all I need is a 3/4 cup for the brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
1 cup for the oatmeal and flour, and then I...
And you wing the rest of it, huh?
No, half teaspoon for the baking soda, and then a teaspoon for the other stuff. And so there's baking powder,
Salt. Is it powder and soda?
And I always double up on the cinnamon.
I was just about to compliment you on your flavor profile. We used to say there's no such thing as too much cinnamon. This tastes really good.
Well, there probably is. We haven't pounded it yet.
Yeah, right. It's. I think that I would say if there's a single secret to cooking, it's people tend to under-season.
Well, then my cake recipe... I make as much as this, or if not more, depends on what group I'm cooking for.
Mm-hmm.
That's one cake mix, any combination. One can of pie filling, any combination. Three eggs. That's all you need.
Ha! Huh. And like just regular sheet cake pan, or?
Well, 9x13. And then you can put a half cup of applesauce in it if you want it more moist.
Ha! Huh. Easy peasy, huh?
My granddaughter, I made her a white cake with cherry pie filling, 3 eggs, and 2 handfuls of M&Ms. She said it was good.
It's the best. And there's something about presenting someone you love with something like that. Here, taste this. Really, it is a good thing to do. Well, besides all your wonderful baking and cooking, and you've had time to... Make some cookbooks, not one, but two. I think making a cookbook is a hard thing. You got to write it all down.
Well, the first one came about because people were coming to the Salvation Army and they're saying, I don't know how to make that.
Yeah.
I've had people say, how do you fix rotisserie chicken? I said, you break a piece off and you put it in your mouth, start chewing.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
And... So we put stuff together. They're real easy things that go through the food pantry. And we gave the clients like 50 cookbooks. And I sold some people that I knew. And it kind of died off. I haven't sold any for a couple of years. But this, everybody kept saying, well, this is new. Is it in the cookbook? No. You should put another cookbook together. And they're still telling me that again.
By popular demand.
I should come up with another cookbook. But... This one, I was working on the railroad, so I came up with the name, Cooking Conductor. I sell it at the railroad. Anybody is interested, you can go to the gift shop or museum, or you can get a hold of me. I've sold cookbooks in restaurants, in parking lots.
You're a cookbook. I had
a lady jog by the corner where I'm a crossing guard and bought one.
Oh, good.
You just never know what's going to happen.
Well, now, so this is a question. For a while, I thought I saw that the Scenic Railroad was advertising a dining car dinners. Are they still doing that?
Yeah, they have the dining car on, pretty sure it's Friday and Saturday night. I don't work that. I have a couple times because of my church group. It's fun to watch people stare at you with their mouth open because they're like, you're here too?
You're of you. Well, so who does the cooking for that when they do it?
You'll have to call. I'm not exactly sure. There's a Hy-Vee used to do it, and now there's a couple.
That, catering company or something. Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure their name.
But... Have you eaten their food?
No.
Okay.
When I went, it was Hy-Vee that did it, and it was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, food and railroads. I guess it all goes together. Well, there's a long history of the dining car. It used to be, I mean, before my lifetime, it used to be a fancy deal.
And my wife and I traveled on Amtrak. We were married in a railroad car, so for our honeymoon, we took Amtrak out west, and we've done it numerous times. Sometimes I just take stuff. I emptied out a 7-Up bottle and put champagne in it when we were married for our honeymoon trip. And then we had shrimp, cheese, and crackers.
You took it with you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, tell us some of your favorite recipes out of this book. And it's called The
Cooking Conductor.
And it's got a dandy picture of John on the front. Yes. So can't miss it.
I did get an easier corned beef recipe that I found than what I was doing. But now that with the pressure cooker, Instapot, you can do it in a couple hours, and it is nice. And then I use...
So you're an Instapot fan?
Depending on what you got.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use a roast and then use a beef or chicken stock, and then take that water out when it's done, and then I make what I call crazy rice.
Yeah.
It's lentils, barley, brown rice, it's vegetables, and then you can add meat to it also to make it a complete meal. And it's because it's crazy, all the stuff you put in there.
Sounds pretty healthy.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people like that. I don't know. Some of the stuff I make off and on. And some, you just got to try it. Like the made rights, I made at the county fair twice.
What do you put in your made rights?
Well, actually, it's a big recipe. Somebody told me, and I said, well, because I had to make a big volume of it. But I cook it with a beef or chicken. I've done both. And you cook it till the water, liquid...
dry.
Evaporates out of it, mm-hmm. The ham balls, they love those. Have you ever had ham balls?
Wait, let's go back to the made right. I want to know how you season it.
I'll have to look this up.
You have to look. Well, because made rights seem to be an Iowa thing. I kind of grew up with Sloppy Joes, which are very similar.
Not really.
No, the Sloppy Joes have got tomato-ish stuff in it, don't they?
Yeah.
And the made rights are almost dry. So... I use the meat and then apple cider vinegar, soy sauce, brown sugar, onion, beef or chicken stock. But then you, like I said, you cook it till it evaporates mm-hmm. out, and it's loose. Where Sloppy Joe's would be all
they're a little wetter.
Yeah, crunched up.
Yeah, Sloppy Joe's. Let's see, what is it? Ketchup and then mustard. I forgot.
My spices that I use is cumin, dill weed, garlic powder, ground ginger, oregano. And time, if you have time.
Uh-huh.
I got it. That's good.
But this is a big recipe that's in the book, but you can break stuff down if you're...
if you do the math,
if
right?
you're good at it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like the ham balls with cheese curds in them.
Ham balls with cheese curds.
And people are like,
oh, my God. That sounds really Iowa, doesn't it?
People are like, what?
So you're biting into the ham ball and there's a big, there's a chunk of cheese in it, basically.
Yeah. Or you can, if you're in Nebraska, they said, what are cheese curds?
Oh.
So you can just use a chunk of cheese.
Good. How did you, I've been making meatballs lately. I mean, just it's a good thing to do. There's different ways to get things to, like, stick together. How do you make your ham into balls?
Well, let's go to that. But I use graham cracker crumbs instead of bread crumbs.
Oh.
And it really seems to help.
Yeah, it would sweeten them up a little, huh? Do you grind the ham yourself?
Well, okay, that's where I changed that recipe. The original recipe said to take a ham steak and food process it, grind it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that.
So how did you
used the ham loaf.
The canned ham loaf.
Like. No, the tube, you can...
Oh!
It's near the hamburger and
stuff. Oh, okay. So it's already ground then.
Right. So it is, they do the work for you.
Yeah.
Okay, then I use the ground pork, mix it together, and then I put the graham crackers in it, two eggs, and you can put a green onion in if you would like to, parsley, you know. That gives it a little color, too, but after you cook it in barbecue sauce, you ain't going to see that anyway. But you can do it with marinara sauce or barbecue sauce.
All right, are you frying them in the pan or roasting them in the oven?
I put them in the oven.
Yeah. Okay.
That way,
it's less oil. Yeah.
Yeah. And they soak up the moisture and everybody's happy. Then I use a thermometer because, you know, you want to make sure that you got it cooked all the way.
Yeah. They have to be dead, right?
Right. You don't want somebody telling you later that they don't feel good.
See, there you go. There you go. Okay. Now, this is probably a trade secret, but how does one ingest the cheese curd into this?
Well, what I do is I make it up into 12 balls, try to get them as close in size as I can. Okay, then you just force it in and surround it.
Before you bake, and then bake it.
Right.
Yeah.
You make it first, then you...
So there's a cheese curd lump. It's
in the middle.
It's not like chopped up. Yeah.
It's a 1 inch. And one time the price was real high, and they had these little blocks. It was real, like, half price. And I thought, what the heck? Who's going to tell? You know, because they have yellow and white cheese curds. So I try to do a little yellow, a little white. So then people are like, what?
It's always good to leave them guessing. I think that sounds like a Mexican.
That's like a mini cheeseburger, really, isn't it?
I like that.
Yeah. Kind of.
I like that. I like that a lot. Have you heard from some of the people involved with the food pantry and Salvation Army, have people actually learned to cook or got some good tips from you? Figured out what to do with rotisserie chicken?
We were handing out deer meat one time, and this lady said to her husband, do you know how to cook deer? Well, it's the same as anything else.
Beef.
I had a friend that called it speedy beef. you just make it the same way. And if they're worried about the taste of the deer, which some people are, if you put enough seasoning in it, you ain't even going to know.
Well, not only that, I called Iowa deer corn-fed deer. So it tastes, you know, it doesn't taste. The only difference is, I have to say, deer fat is not the same as beef fat. When you clean the pan out after you've cooked the deer, that fat is one of the hardest fats I have ever worked with.
Right, it helps the deer to get through the winter.
I never noticed there was any on what I've used.
Oh, you had really lean. Well, maybe your beef, your deer was trimmed better
than
ours.
Trimmed well, yes, yeah.
It could be.
Yeah.
But we get it from a locker. It's donated.
Yeah.
And we can't share it, you know.
Right.
Because some food pantries, if they have too much, they call us. If we have too much, we call them. But we were told that, no. You get what you get, and you don't share it.
Yeah, that's very good, very good. Well, we're talking to John Dawkins, and we'll come back for more. This is KHOI. Find out more information about this fine radio station at www.khoifm.org. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen and other fine programs. Well, it's apple season. There are many fine orchards around, and actually there's some, if you look, there's actually interesting trees in people's backyards too, but they're coming ripe now. It's time for apples. Here's a little tune about apples in Iowa. It's written by Rick Exner and Ames Troubadour. He's written a lot of good things, and this is called The Apple Two-Step.
The green of September is the green of prairie hay, the green of an apple orchard on a summer day. Stay in the season when it turns to slip away. Go south for the weekend, take a downstate holiday. There are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still a few fish in the sea. Down on the southern tier and far out on a limb, up in the branches with the empty robin's nest, there was the apple that the harvest grew left. There are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prayer. Far pale apple blossoms are of the distant past. The Cortlands and the Macintosh, they ripen much too fast. The spies and the Baldwins are the keepers of the contrast. You'll find it's worth waiting for the apple that will last. There are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still a few fish in the sea.
Yes, that was a tune called The Apple Two-Step by Rick Exner. Yes, it was. So there are apples. And some, if you feel like visiting an orchard, which is a real fine thing to do this time of year, there's some here in central Iowa. And here's just a few of them. Berry Patch Farms in Nevada.
Yeah, that's a you pick. It's lots of fun for kids.
They're open Monday through Saturday. Hours 8 to 5, and there's a Center Grove Orchard at Cambridge, and they are open 9 to 7 most days. Deals Orchard in Jefferson, they have 40 acres of apple trees. They're in Jefferson, Iowa, open daily from 9 to 6. And Iowa Orchard in Granger, there's a U-Pick place there. And Wills Family Orchard in Adel, 12 different apple varieties, run by the Wills family, and they are open 9 to 6 Saturdays and noon to 6 on Sundays. Visit the farm. Visit all these farms. You'll meet a lot of nice people. It seems that apple growers will be nice people.
Well, you know, we have an old show that we did with the Wilson Orchard folks,
yes.
I don't know, it was in a podcast too, talks a lot about this is apple country. We do really well with apples around here. And I think Wilson Orchard, which is over on the eastern part of the state, now has something south of Des Moines too.
Oh, yes.
I forgot. Sorry, we don't have the information on that, but I keep meaning to go down there and see what they're doing. 'Tis the season to go for the apple picking. And I think the fun thing is, if you go to the orchard, you can do a variety of comparisons. You know, you pick one of this, and then you taste them and you see some are eaters, some are bakers, some are more sour, some are sweeter, some are softer. And of course, they come in different colors. And this is a lot of fun for kids.
Yes, it is.
So it's apple crisp time, apple pie time, and apple cider time.
Oh, yes.
All of those good things.
Three cheers for the apple growers in Iowa that have discovered and are exploring ciders, because they're getting better.
Yeah, we're getting some good fermented ciders. Now, I know everybody loves sweet ciders, but I also like the not sweet ciders. And those take different kinds of apples. Those apples that you make that kind of cider out of, it's a more of a European tradition. They don't taste good when you eat them. You know, you don't want to pick it and go, no. They're usually really sour or kind of gnarly tasting. But they ferment up into a really fine, not sweetened cider.
Good. So, John, how do you deal with... if somebody brings you a bushel of apples or fall things, what do you do with apples?
Well, with my wife, she likes the sweeter ones. I like the sour ones. So we haven't made that much. Either we eat them. I've made a Dutch apple pie because I don't like doing the fancy top work on them, you know. Same thing with like sweet potato pie. Pumpkin pie.
So that's like an open top?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I made a pumpkin pie for a guy last week for a birthday present.
That's a good birthday present. I like that.
Well, he's in his 90s.
Oh, that's very good.
Well, Lana's a good pastry maker, so she makes really elaborate, beautiful pies, you know, with the lattice work, woven stuff. I mean, they're just gorgeous
tasty. That's because I think of cooking about this size, pie size. You two, Donna and John, you cook for a cast of thousands. Well, not thousands, but when there's a whole lot of people to cook for, get out those big flat pans and make things that way.
Well, that's why apple crisp is really nice for a group, too.
Yeah, I haven't done that before, so I don't know. It's something for me to try.
It's a little flour, a little oats, some sugar, some butter. Cinnamon, you know, you can put nuts in it, but it's a crumble top, so it's really, really easy for larger groups. Oh, I mean, you still have to cut the apples up. That's always the work.
Yeah, it's sort of an upside down. I mean, you make the apples on the bottom and sprinkle the stuff on
the
top.
Right, grease the pan first, then put the apples in. Yeah, it's really easy.
See, easy is good.
Well, the main work is to peel and slice the apples. Sometimes I don't peel the apples. I don't mind the peel in the apple crisp. You know, it depends on the audience.
I'm a wimp. I like to peel the apples.
Well, you know, there's extra vitamins in those peels, a little more roughage. The peels are good for you.
Good. John, what else do you have to say about feeding people? There's something really nice about feeding people and even doing things in large quantities. What have you learned over the years about feeding people?
Well, it's different when you have to make it huge, but then you get the chance to meet people, visit with them.
Very social, isn't
you know,
it?
Yeah.
You really popular too, doesn't it?
Well, and then I'll clean off their place for them, refill their drinks. You know, I think they really enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Good. You got to meet a lot of people. And like the promotional information we got on you, you are a popular person in Boone. You got to be the parade marshal sometime or other recently.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
See?
I was the grand marshal for Puffer Belly Parade, I was in the parade.
Did you wear your conductor's uniform?
Well, I wore my summer uniform.
Oh.
I tried to wear the exact same thing that I wore when I was on Channel 13 when I made the muffins, and I got a red shirt and my conductor hat. And, there was a lot of people that were looking at me like, what are you doing there?
Oh, they have to get somebody to be the Grand Marshal, and it might as well be you. Very good. It sounds like you bring a lot of joy to the Boone area. And
I've been known to hand out snacks at my corner, and the kids like it. The moms get a big smile.
Another thing John does is the crossing guard?
Right.
So that's why he has a corner.
Oh, yeah. Make that.
I had a lady at church say, I saw you skipping across the street with that little girl. And I said, I've been doing that for a long time.
Well, see, you have a lot of skills. And so, cook, railroad conductor, and a welder, an important person, and crossing guard, and feeder and bringer of joy to lots of folks.
And this is all in a retirement package here.
Well, I'm too hyper to sit still.
Keep moving as long as we can, you know.
Yeah.
Very good, very good. Well, John, tell folks how they can can find you probably certain days at the Boone Scenic Valley Railroad, but tell them how they can get your cookbooks.
Well, they can go to the Boone Scenic Valley, the gift shop, or the museum.
That's in the old railroad station, huh?
Yeah.
Which is a fun trip in and of itself.
Right. And then they can look around, too, you know, while they're there.
And riding the train for the fall leaves is a wonderful,
We get a lot of people
for that. I've done that. I love it. I don't know, what do you think, another 3 weeks and the leaves will turn?
Well, actually, last week, some of the trees were already starting to
turn.
Oh,
really? Oh, boy.
It's like the soybeans and the corn, It's coming.
Yeah, I noticed this week the harvest has started already. You can see plowed things through the cornfields. Here we go.
Or they can call me. My number is 515-298-3805. I usually turn my phone off or whatever. I go to bed at 6. I wake up early. My schedule got messed up from the railroad, I think. It doesn't seem to want to change. I think I'm stuck there.
Early to bed, early to rise.
Stuck there.
Good. Well, thank you for being with us today, John. We've been talking to John Dawkins about food and feeding people.
And railroads.
And railroads. Thank you. Thank you for sharing all your information.
Well, I try.
You tried. You did good. Great. I want to mention an upcoming thing here. We mentioned the moon this evening, the supermoon, but there's something else going on. There is an equinox celebration, fall equinox celebration at Mustard Seed Community Farm.
Okay, is the equinox on the 21st this year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. September 21st from 7 to 9, and there'll be sunset, farm walk, bonfire, dessert, potluck, and music. So Mustard Seed Farm, you can find out more at their Facebook page, mustardseed.communityfarm. It's a fine place to look at the sky and look at your neighbors.
Yep, it'll be really pretty out there.
That'll be very good. That'll be good. Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Okay, the same radio show that you just heard today will be in podcast format starting Thursdays wherever you listen to podcasts. You just go to Donna Lana, that's one word, DonnaLonna, Kitchen, and there you will find us.
Very good, very good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Support this fine radio station, KHOI. And if you go to their website, khoifm.org, there's a donate button you can support and become a member. Enjoy, good apple. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.
One long northern winter starts so bitter and so cold. Upstate you'll need a sunny memory you can hold. One that grows sweeter while the rest are growing mold. one that stays with you when the green leaves turn to gold. There are still few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prayer.